lights on the street lights. We cultivate the culture, bring forth your contribution. City unite, rhymes, poetry, knowledge, wisdom, understanding and being stupid. City unite, put in work, network, F work, do something, make it happen, make it work, yo. City unite, flyers, we pay, spray paint, make your mark, don't backtrack, grab your backpack.
The one, from the Valley of the Sun, master none. Walk your alley with...
Welcome to the InfoShop News Show for March 5th, 2006. I'm Chuck Munson, the editor of InfoShop News, and I'll be hosting this third installment of our new podcast. This program is a collaboration of the InfoShop News Collective and volunteers on several continents. In this edition, we will hear the final installment of an interview I did last year with John Becken. In the previous installments, John Becken talked about anarchist economics and what the IWW is doing these days. In this portion of the interview, John Becken will be talking about his role with the Industrial Worker newspaper and Anarcho-Syndicalist Review magazine. We finish our interview by talking about the current state of the alternative press. Infoshop.org and the Alternative Media Project need your financial support to continue all of our projects. We just kicked off our spring online fundraising drive, during which we hope to raise $3,500 for the organization. You can find out more by going to www.infoshop.org/donate.html. InfoShop is also organizing a spring benefit concert week, which will happen during the first week of May. If your band would like to do a show, or if you'd like to organize a benefit show in your city or town, we encourage you to do that and contact us with the details. We now go to Erica for the latest from InfoShop News.
Hi, this is Erica, reporting for InfoShop.org. What I'll be reading is an audio version of the InfoShop News Wire, located on the web at news.infoshop.org. That's without the www. We'll begin with the articles that have been featured in the past month. Then I'll be reading the titles and brief introductions of articles you can find on the website. Tucson, Arizona. Community of Activists offers free classes, clothes, and activities. A story by Jennifer Duffy for the Arizona Daily Star. At the Dry River Collective, there's no single person in charge, no obligatory dues, and no majority rule. The goal, says Josh Bano, one of the founding members, is to create an accessible community space where people learn and connect. All events are free, including classes in everything from yoga to Spanish, concerts, and documentary showings, because members want to take the focus off money. It's a model of the way the group thinks society should operate. No hierarchies, sustainable living, self-sufficiency, and free education and community resources. We're trying to reinforce the idea that you don't have to have money to have fun. Read, be educated, see a band, or watch a documentary, said Bano, a 22-year-old student at Prescott College. From the Ground Up, Race and Left Response to Katrina, by Walida Imarisha for Left Turn magazine. In the wake of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, thousands of progressives, radicals, anarchists, activists, hippies, and college students, the majority of them white, have gone down south to aid in relief and rebuilding efforts. And white organizations across the country have dedicated time and resources. But in their rush to help, are they recreating the racist dynamics we have seen from the government? Palestine. Anarchists against the wall arrested and beaten. On Saturday, February 25, 2006, in Tel Aviv, 150 activists demonstrated outside the Kira Army base in Tel Aviv in response to the violence of the IDF and the police in anti-wall demonstrations, as seen in the shooting of 17-year-old Anarchists Against the Wall member Matan Cohen. Matan was shot in the eye with a rubber bullet at the anti-wall demo the previous day. Four protesters were arrested and beaten by the police. AATW is now demanding an immediate investigation into the use of unnecessary force by the security forces on activists. Anti-racist action calls for radical pro-choice contingent on March 18th in Pittsburgh. South Dakota Democrats have pushed through a bill making abortion illegal in their state. They hope to assist Supreme Court Republicans in overturning Roe v. Wade to make abortion illegal throughout the country. Radicals have worked tirelessly for years to ensure that the government and right-wing extremists have no control over what a woman does to her body. Christian extremists in their Democratic and Republican parties are now working tirelessly to take away that assurance. Anti-racist action is calling for a radical pro-choice contingent in the March 18th mass march against the Iraq War to show that we are still willing to fight for our reproductive rights and that we will not let a group of religious extremists control our lives. We will gather during the rally organized by the Thomas Merton Center Anti-War Committee. The rally is in East Liberty at the corner of Penn and Highland Avenue at 1 p.m. The march leaves at 2:30 and will end at the Military Recruitment Center in Oakland. Wear pink, black, and purple, and look for others dressed the same. Follow the pink and black flags. For more information, email anti-racist action at all capital letters PGH_ARA@yahoo.com. Pittsburgh, March 17th to 18th, anti-war/counter-military recruitment convergence. We won't be Bush's cannon fodder. Lay siege to military recruitment. On Friday, March 17th, Pittsburgh Organizing Group, POG, will lay symbolic siege to the Military Recruitment Center in Oakland. Then on Saturday, we will lead a youth and counter-recruitment contingent to participate in the mass march organized by the Thomas Merton Center. And that's all for now. Thanks for listening. All of these articles and much more can be found on www.infoshop.org.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
We'll have a global intifada. Min Gaza illa Irlanda. La Huria wa Ahad al-Alumni intifada. We'll have a lot of intifadas from our fathers and daughters. We won't totter when they shot us like the martyrs that taught us. So don't bother to tighten the noose or loose collar. The tighter it gets, the fighter spit hits harder. And we'll holler louder and be heard farther. We'll raise one voice that joins across water. When a Palestinian in Berlin throws a rock, it clanks off American tanks in Iraq. And it drops in Chicago on a ghetto cop and ends up through the window of a Nike shop. But don't stop till it plops to my chiapas, ladies. Yes, señorita Zapatista, toss it over to Haiti. Through Bolivia, Colombia, a rumble in Bali. Through Africa and Asia, rage on U.S. proxies. All colonies of robbery and poverty living, each are one.
one bar, the imperial prison. One might feel free because the treats they are given, but the jail still stands if one man still isn't. But listen, the winds of change are hissing past. Instead of bars of the cage, we'll become bars of the staff. And each community a note in the freedom song, a harmonious chord, a chorus so strong. Each puppet government of the empire puzzle, piece by piece will cease into rubble. And one by one, or maybe all at once, it comes tumbling down and crumbling to dust. And stand up, shake it off and move on, and prepare a new era to finally dawn. So think globally and act locally, make a policy that our goal will be to unfurl one world community, beginning with resisting American hegemony. So shake off occupation, shake off U.S. domination, shake off Western colonization. We're gonna shake off the cops and wake up our nation. Shake off the cops and wake up our nation. We'll have a global intifada, Menbazra in Nicaragua, La Moria, Wahada, Alumni intifada. We'll have a global intifada. And Alexandra in Alabama, La Maria, Wahada, Alumni intifada. It's time for Americans to join with the rest of the world in resisting the oppression done in our name.
That was Global Intifada by Joe Carr from his new album Resistance to Empire. Joe Carr is a Kansas City-based activist who is active on Palestine solidarity issues, chiefly through the International Solidarity Movement. He is an artist, journalist, he's been to Iraq, he is currently on tour around the country talking about his recent trips to Palestine and Iraq. He has a website where you can find more information about his songs, and that is www.lovinrevolution.org. That's www.lovinrevolution.org. InfoShop News interviewed John Beckin in September 2005 at the Radical Economics and the Labor Movement Conference, which was held here in Kansas City. Beckin is currently a professor at Albright College in Pennsylvania. He is currently the editor of The Industrial Worker, which is the monthly newspaper of the IWW, and he's a member of the editorial collective for Anarcho-Syndicalist Review. The first two parts of this interview are available on the website. In the third part, we will be talking to John about The Industrial Worker, the Anarcho-Syndicalist Review Journal, and his thoughts on the current state of the alternative media movement. The InfoShop News podcast will be featuring more interviews in future shows, including some new audio from the National Conference on Organized Resistance, which was recently held in Washington, D.C.
How's the Industrial Worker doing these days?
The paper comes out fairly regularly. It does require substantial labor, volunteer labor. There's no one paid to put out the paper other than the printers, but they're not IWW members, you know. It requires substantial volunteer labor to write it, to edit it, to distribute it. It requires substantial funds from the union to keep it going, and it's not easy to get distribution. We live in a economy where the chains of distribution, it's not even entirely ideological. There's not enough money in selling a labor newspaper. Let's say you could sell 3 copies in every bookstore around the country. To the employers, the commission that they would make, you know, the bookstore chains and such, the commission they would make on selling those is just not enough money right to make it interesting to them, let alone the fact that they don't like the paper and they don't like what's in it. But economically, there's no money in it for them. They wouldn't sell, you know, if it was a 50-cent or a dollar, pro-capitalist rag. They wouldn't sell that either. Because,
right. Return on the...
Yeah. So the distribution's a problem, and we have to rely on, members, volunteers, such forth to do it. Circulation is up somewhat from where it used to be. And obviously, the number of members getting the paper is up dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 4 years, we have recorded double-digit increase in subscription income without raising the subscription rates. But what does that mean? My math on the current subscription income suggests, and this is an approximation because we have one rate for people and another rate for institutions. They're not vastly different, but we do charge institutions more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have exact data on who paid which rate. I suppose you could train the computer to spit it out, but we haven't. But I estimate that there are somewhere in the neighborhood of a few hundred subscribers. And then, of course, the members. There's a lot of members who get the paper, and there are a lot of people who take bundles. But somewhere in the neighborhood of a few hundred. This is not enough to set the capitalist monopoly on media, on its edge. They are fairly secure in their control of the means of propaganda at this moment. We do the best we can, but it's not good enough. We need to do a lot better. I mean, now when I say this, I will tell you that the circulation of the Industrial Worker is many times the circulation of the newspaper of the AFL-CIO. It's infinite. They shut down their paper. They decided that their paper was so useless that they stopped publishing it last year. On that sense, we are ahead of the AFL-CIO in this, effort. But that's a very low benchmark to set ourselves, that we should do better than this dying dinosaur, which, even if they do have more members than us. But fewer every year. The trend line, we'll keep going this way in another 20 years. But no, I think the paper, when you have struggles going on, it's easier to get, some content. There still needs to be more involvement. We try to have a paper that's written by rank and file workers who reflect on their own experiences. And a lot of the paper is that, but not as much of the paper as we would like. A lot of rank and file workers, they work long hours, they come home really tired, or nothing in their experiences sort of invited them to reflect on what's going on. It's not like in the rest of society, they're invited to think about what's going on in their lives, their workplaces, how it should be different, such forth. And so we ask them to do this, and it's a really alien experience. And so it is a constant struggle to get the level of involvement in the paper.
What's the best way for people to get involved? Just send you articles?
We can talk to people. It depends what their situation is. So in the past, we have had people who have tried to develop columns around particular campaigns that they were doing. So for a long time, for example, we had construction workers who were writing in stories about job tactics that they were engaging in, about efforts to organize across these craft lines that have divided the constructions for a long time. I don't have that going on now, but we had that going on for a long time. We have had people who try and use the paper to support different kinds of educational campaigns. So sometimes they actually write material, sometimes they get in touch with people to organize coverage of particular issues and then distribution of the issues that have that coverage, around sweatshops, for example. Some of our members have been trying to build this campaign, trying to put baseball consumers and fans in touch with the people who make baseball caps and logo shirts and such forth. And, their theory is that most baseball fans would just as soon their baseballs and caps and paraphernalia be made by workers who were able to enjoy some leisure time to, live their lives in some comfort, such forth. And their experience generally has been that the ballpark owners think that they are mistaken in the instincts of the fans, and the ballpark owners are quite confident that the fans would merely be annoyed were they confronted with the conditions of labor of their workers, and so they, help the fans out by preventing those interactions from taking place. And it's very considerate of them, but we've been engaging in struggles to circumvent this consideration and, have these dialogues. And frankly, we've had good response where we've been able to actually talk to fans without getting arrested. Most of them do find it, you know, sort of appalling.
Right.
That, but, and that's a difficult kind of a campaign. I think it's interesting. So, like, there's a union in Bangladesh that organizes garment workers, and we've had regular communication. We raise funds in the aftermath of the tsunami to help with them with relief of members. There was a tour which we helped organize some stops of, where garment workers from their union and other unions were talking about the sweatshop industries. But the truth is that it is quite difficult. You know, production is so dispersed and it moves around so often, and quite often the workers have no idea what they're making, you know, because they're making pieces, right? You know, you've got a worker here who cuts a sleeve, and they just cut sleeves all day, and a worker over here who sews buttons, and, you know, and even if they did make the whole piece, which most of them don't, what does a Pittsburgh Pirates logo mean to them? You know, it's just another strange logo that they're sewing on, you know, and next week they'll be sewing some other strange, an alligator on a shirt, or, you know, who knows what the hell. So they often aren't really conscious of what they're making. They're totally alienated from the product of their labor. And at the same time, they don't speak English in many cases. And our knowledge of Bengali is sort of limited. You know, the baseball fans find it difficult. And, you know, the whole structure of the global economy makes it so hard to know who's making the goods that you're, you know, consuming or dealing with. And that is something we need to develop, human relations with workers around the world. We need to have workers from the U.S., you know, we go on vacation. Well, we should, sure, spend some time on the beach, but also spend a few days going and talking to workers in the area. You know, find somebody who works for the same company or in the same line of work. It's easy for me to say this. I haven't had time to take a vacation in a few years, and, you know, I'm working 60, 80-hour weeks. But you know, we need to establish human relations between workers around the world, because we are engaged now in this increasingly global production chain. And we don't know people on the other end of it. We don't know people halfway down. And, you know, there's no future. If we don't come to know each other, mm-hmm. how are we going to support each other?
How about the Anarcho-Syndicalist Review? You have a new edition out, a new issue. How's that publication doing?
ASR... we've been publishing it for a number of years. We were shaken a little bit in this last year. One of our contributing editors died, Harold Vader Arneson, who was a friend. He'd been coming over to the U.S. For several years, and I'd gone over a couple times there as well. Stayed in my house several times. I mean, he was a friend, but also he was well-connected, particularly to the Northern European syndicalist movement, but well-respected and well-connected. He'd been working in Norway for many years on various syndicalist projects and had established a reputation. And he was an impressive theorist. He was a clear thinker, but he also was very non-sectarian. So he would argue with people, but still maintain working relations with them. Mm-hmm. And that had drawn a lot of, you know, we were building a circle of contributors, which mostly did move through Harold because he had a command of these languages that we didn't. So it really shook us organizationally, it shook us personally, you know, but, and still, we are reaching out to several people who've expressed interest in working on the review. We do have this new issue out, which... this one was a little while. We have another issue in the works, which we have several articles for, with contributors from around the world. This could be a special issue in the IDW Centenary. I was just approached yesterday by a fellow at this conference, a professional economist. I have to talk to him a little bit more. But who asked if we might be interested in having some economists curate a guest issue that would look at economic questions and the anarchist tradition in relation to them. I need to talk to him a little bit more to get a clearer sense of where he's coming at these questions from. Mm-hmm. But I think I think a lot of people are taking the review seriously. And we do try, and the struggle with the review is to try to get, the review, we don't conceptualize it as really an agitational paper. Mm-hmm. We conceptualize it as a journal which has analysis reports, yes, news, yes, but I mean, we bring it out every 3 months, right. Sometimes less. It can't be a newspaper, right? We're trying to, you know, reflect on what's going on in the world of labor, in the world of economics as it affects workers, in the world of anarchist theory, to have debates around questions such as the nature of the global economy, such as what are the strategies that workers can use in this situation, which is quite different than the situation that syndicalism historically arose in response to. And a lot of the structures that people have historically used, I think we need to rethink them, particularly in Europe. There have been a lot of splits over how you relate to the labor relations regimes that have been put in place there, which are there to co-opt unions, there's no doubt about it, but does that mean you can simply ignore them, or do you have to have a critical engagement? Or there's a number of unions in Europe that have held to various organizational structures which made sense in an era when they were small propaganda groups. Many of them have grown beyond that status to have thousands of members, and perhaps systems based on a handful of volunteers who know everybody in the organization, you know, and take on responsibility, might not be adequate to an organization of a few thousand people who are scattered over much larger territory, you know. So we try to be a forum for these kinds of debates. We try to be a venue, an increasingly international venue to which people come together and, you know, explore issues. And I think that's an important work. It is a work, I think it's a work that the anarchist movement is increasingly interested in. I talk to people when I go around to conferences, which I don't have the time to do as much as I'd like, but I've spoken, for example, in economic theory at a number of conferences recently in the last few years, not a huge number, like 4 or 5, but there's always been standing room only. I mean, there have been hundreds of people in the room. There's a hunger, I think, for really serious engagement with these issues. There's not a lot of journals that are really doing it, even though the anarchist movement in some ways is growing. In some ways it's growing in organizational maturity. I mean, you have a number of federations that are forming, but there's not even really a good general agitational journal. We haven't really put as much time into these kinds of debates and discussions as we need. And the climate, just from a publishing standpoint, it's a much more difficult climate than it used to be.
Right.
Bookstores in the last year, about a fourth of the bookstores that carry ASR directly, I mean, we do have a number that get us through a distributor, but about a fourth of the bookstores that carry us directly have gone out of business. Some of them were selling large quantities, but, I mean, large quantities, 10, 15 copies, but, you know.
It's good for me.
Yeah. And, you know, that puts a big dent in our circulation. We had a distributor several years ago now that had been taking 500 copies an issue. Fine print. They went bankrupt. Well, they were taking 500 copies and they were selling 400 of them. That we were in every Barnes & Noble in the country fine print.
Yeah, more of that.
Now, they weren't paying us and they went bankrupt owing us thousands of dollars, which has a lot to do with that deficit figure that we post in every issue. But leaving that aside, and I do resent the fact that capitalists went and looted this enterprise and took money that belonged to the anarchist movement, but 400 issues, 400 copies of each issue of ASR were in Barnes & Noble stores being picked up by people who walked in them, probably many of them coming across anarchist ideas for the first time. All of that circulation was lost when they went under. We've talked to a number of distributors since then, and they don't want to pick up the magazine. Some say it's too obscure. Some say that they would take it if we went full color throughout on glossy paper, which we can't afford to do. They claim that they only carry papers that do this, but in fact, I've looked at the publication list of many of these, and many of them carry papers that have full-color covers, but the inside's on newsprint. And in many cases, they're carrying papers. I mean, I've worked in radical bookstores off and on over the years, so I have some sense of what sells, and there are papers being carried that we were outselling 5-to-1 in stores.
Right.
Now, they have wider distribution, so perhaps that's a piece of it, but I think we really, not that I mean to tell a capitalist how they can turn a buck, But I actually think the capitalists could turn a buck selling our magazine if they were inclined to give it a chance. But they're narrow-minded.
Well, see, the odd paradox is that the outlets for alternative media have been drying up. So in one case, it's like, it'd be nice to see more magazines, but the outlets aren't there. But at the same time, anarchist magazines that are making it into corporate bookstores even are doing well.
Yeah, but it's harder. There's only a few that are able to make that. And frankly, they're not necessarily the best. It's just for some fluke of chance, they happened to hit a distributor when they were a little more open-minded, or, you know, their distributor didn't go under. A lot of us were reliant on fine print. And a lot of alternative publications were hit very hard when they went down. And then a lot of the publishers, I mean, I have standards, which other people don't have. So, like, we've had a number of distributors who said, if you'll pay us $1,000, we'll distribute your magazine. Now, I don't want to do that. Now, it might be that they actually would get us into many stores. They promised they would, and perhaps these are, you know, honest. When you bribe them, they stay bribed and do what you bribe them to do. But the economics of it are horrible on the one hand, but it also just sets such a horrible precedent. If we're going buying shelf space, then somebody else could go and buy the shelf space from us. And Borders, actually, we were invited to participate in a program with Borders where if we paid $1,500, they would put us on an end cap.
Right.
Well, it wasn't Borders directly, it was one of their distributors, but still, you know. And this was a program that was aimed for the alternative media. I went and looked at one of these end caps. Martha Stewart Living was one of the alternative media that was being featured in this program.
Because it's, of course, $1 billion company now.
But they don't mind buying shelf space, I suspect. And they have the resources to do it. Where Practical Anarchy, you know, you're not in a position to be buying shelf space, right?
No.
And perhaps it would bother you ethically if you were in a position to do it. Perhaps it wouldn't. but
well, looking at the bigger picture for alternative media, like all the different options, magazines, internet, newspapers, have you thought at all about like a strategy, in the current situation, that would be the best for like anarchists to get their ideas out there, or just radicals, to the general public? What do you think is the best strategy?
I think we have to have a multifaceted strategy. There's two problems here. One is sort of what's the message that we want to put out. And that also has a couple components, because there are different tendencies in the movement, and we do not all agree. And I think it would be quite foolish to think that we're going to all come together on a single, you know, media project, because the disagreements between us, they're pretty severe. And there are people out there who claim to be anarchists who, frankly, I'm not willing to be in the same room with. They are police informants in some cases. And, you know, I'm just not interested in collaborating with police informers. I don't understand why the publication with the best circulation in the country doesn't see a problem with this. But you know, leaving that aside, and I will leave it aside, there's, you know, you do have to decide what you're going to say, but then you also, I do think a lot of our projects don't pay enough attention to form. A lot of the publications that are put out there, a lot of the websites that are put out there, there's radio shows, there's TV, an awful lot of it has a slapdash flavor about it. And I can understand that, because it is a lot of work to do things well, and we're very busy, and we're working hours to get the funds to enable us to do these projects, and we do, you know, want to live lives and, you know, socialize, and, you know, there's all sorts of... But if we're going to put our ideas out there, I think it behooves us to take the time to edit them, to make them coherent, to present them in an attractive form. And we're trying to engage in a dialogue with people who have been told all their lives that we're really scary people who don't have a clue what we're talking about. You know, our thinking is confused, and, you know. And so we need to really go to that extra mile, I think, to be more coherent than the capitalist press, to really show people what's going on, not to just rant and rave. I didn't have nothing against a little ranting and raving, but to back it up with facts, with examples, to speak to the actual material conditions of people's lives in ways that, you know, are... We shouldn't be afraid of being polished, of having our stuff look good and sound good and, you know, be navigable. If you're going to set up a website, you should be able to read it clearly and find what you're looking for. And, like... a lot of very good people, this isn't really an anarchist project, but a lot of very good people work on the indie media sites, and there's a lot of very good information on there. But it can be hell to find what you're looking for. If you don't, you know, if it doesn't happen to be on the front page when you log on, they're not organized to help people find stuff. I don't, at least not the way I think they are. Your project is much better organized, has subject tabs, and you know. But an awful lot of people put stuff out there, and I don't think they really think about, you know, it's, I got it out there. I can breathe a sigh now and relax. But they don't think about, how am I going to get it before people? How are people going to use it? Is it going to make sense to people? And so we need to do a lot more, really work, and professionalize is perhaps the wrong word, because I think we need to speak in ordinary people's voices. We don't want to have like a cadre of people who are removed from the movement, you know, who become then our voices. We want to give voice to people, but we want to do it in a way that's credible. That's and there's resources that militate against that. There's time that militates against that. But I also think just a lot of people, they sort of think that it's authentic if it's sloppy. And perhaps if you're speaking to a particular milieu, you know, that sort of do-it-yourself, you know, milieu, in that kind of an environment, it might make sense to have real rough edges on the work you're doing. But if you're trying to speak to a labor movement, for example, you're competing with, you know, corporate propaganda, you're competing with unions which are really weak, but they spend a lot of money polishing the look of their publications, even if they're empty inside. And I'm not saying that we should try to compete on the gloss factor, but we should try to look like we're taking our message seriously, that we, you know, that we spent some time putting it together. You know? I don't know if that answers...
Yeah, that's a good answer.
It's rotten to its core. It's time for revolution. There's a world worth dying for. With no government and no rulers, no bosses and no cops, no money, no McDonald's and no free trade, and no GMO crops. 'Cause I'm proud to be an anarchist, so at least I'll know when I'm free. And I won't forget those who died tearing down hierarchy. I'll at least stand up against the man in the name of community. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. Raise your fist for anarchy. From the streets of mid-Seattle to the squats of Amsterdam, from Quebec down to Miami, in tears we'll take our stand. From Prague over to Genoa, from D.C. to L.A., there's pride in every anarchist heart, and it's time we stand and say that we are proud to be an anarchist, so at least I'm home and I'm free. And I won't forget those who died fighting down the tyranny, and I'll at least stand up against the man in defense of liberty. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. Yes, I'll at least stand up next to you in one solidarity. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. Raise your fist for anarchy.
That That was Proud to Be an Anarchist by Joe Carr, written to the music of Lee Greenwood's propagandistic Proud to Be an American, and that's available on Joe's website at www.lovinrevolution.org. InfoShop News can be found on the internet at news.infoshop.org. We bring you a variety of independent and mainstream news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can reach us by sending an email to chuck@mutualaid.org or by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of each page. We'd like to thank a few people for making this podcast possible. Erica and William for helping produce this show. Carrie Leiderson for her recent reports from New Orleans. The Drunken Immortals for the music at the top of the show, and Strike Anywhere for the music you're about to hear. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
When they broke down the door with the guns in the face of your wife and child, and as they pinned you to the floor, did you say, "Officer, I'm not resisting you"? American justice, American